This is Mr. Michael Dean, broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural, wild, mountain west in the occupied states of America. And on the other end of the inner tubes, we have Mr. Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker from BadQuaker.com. Are you there? Are you safe? Have you been contacted by the government?
I am here, Michael, and I am safe, and I have not been contacted by the government government.
Yeah. Well, good, because they're big, dumb doo-doo heads, and Barack Obama is a liar. He's a socialist, and his feet stink.
And lying is one of the things we want to talk about today.
The topic at today's Fiends Anonymous meeting is honesty.
You know, honesty is the best policy.
You know, I used to go to AA meetings, and one of the traditions of AA is to maintain anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. I've been sober for 20 years. I went to meetings till 2006, and I haven't been to a meeting since. Still sober, still hanging on to my resentments. No, I still try to work on improving my myself. I learned some good things in those rooms. I don't feel I am violating my anonymity because I am no longer a member of AA, so I don't have to represent them. Basically, the idea of anonymity is twofold. One, so people aren't embarrassed to go. I was never embarrassed to go. And the other reason is, so if you turn into a major butthole, you don't embarrass the fellowship. So I have renounced my membership. I just stopped going so I can be a big butthole and not embarrass the fellowship. So they did good things. I kind of graduated from it. They say you never graduate from it. They say, when you say you stop going to meetings, people in meetings say, where you been? Oh, I stopped going to meetings. Oh, you'll be back, which is this kind of like parenthetical of like, you'll die or you'll come back begging for our help. But I have not so far, and I'm happy. But one of the things, and I did go on to write a book called A User's Manual for the Human Experience, which includes a lot of my descriptions of work I did after the fellowship, kind of expanding on the shoulders of giants of the founders of AA. And then there's a lot of stuff in there about, you know, getting bad people out of your life and blocking creepy people and not being weighted down by them. And then learning to make a living, doing your own thing, working at home. Which, or you know, working in an office, wherever you want to do it. But I've not worked a day job in 12 years, and I am 13 years, actually, now, coming up on. And I'm loving it, and I didn't like working in offices. So I worked two jobs, one in an office and then one at home in the evenings to hone my talents, to be able to do all sorts of things other than work for the man. And I like it. So I wrote this book, A User's Manual for the Human Experience, telling you how to do all that. But the thing about AA meetings, sometimes they'd have a topic. Like, you know, there'd be a speaker. He would give his experience, strength, and hope. He or she would. And then, you know, that was usually about a third of the meeting. And then they would open it up for, you know, people to share. Which is, I have surmised, from the Quaker tradition. And Ben Stone's a Quaker. He's a bad Quaker. He kind of is to AA, to Quakerism, what I am to AA. Like, the, you know, the fundamentals are still with me, but I don't go to meetings. You don't go to Quaker meetings. And AA meetings are kind of like Quaker meetings in several ways. And one is that there's no, like, real leader, or the leaders change in AA meetings. They rotate so nobody gets a big head and, you know, nobody can say, this is my meeting. And basically, like, people just stand up and share, you know, testify and then sit down. Like, how the program is working in their lives, and Quakers do that, right, Ben?
Yeah, that's pretty much how it organizes itself.
Yeah, and a lot of times there'll be a topic at a meeting, like, you know, when the speaker's done, they'll say, "Okay, today's topic is making amends or anything you want to talk about." But, you know, if you got something to say, if you need a topic, there's a topic. And or the topic will be, you know, forgiveness, or the topic will be, you know, how to not relapse, or some topic that's related to recovery. And a lot of times, if the person can't think of a topic, they say, all right, the topic is honesty. Like, that's the it's not in the book or anything. It's just, I mean, honesty is all through the book, but that's kind of the default go-to, like, if someone's not creative enough to come up with a better topic or a you know, more interesting topic, that's the topic that people revert to. At every meeting of every 12-step fellowship, 12-step fellowship I've been to, that's been the default, you know, 50% of the time. If they can't think of one, that's the one they give. So the topic of today's FF, Fiends Anonymous meeting, is going to be honesty. So with that said, Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, tell me about honesty.
You know, I want to quote our friend Nima Vedotti here, and this is coming from his latest video.
He was on the show last week. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I heard that. It was really good.
Just, the guy that like started the show, built it up, and then quit to go make babies, who doesn't have time to do a show, came back and did a show. It was pretty awesome. And we didn't promote it. Like, I wanted to just surprise people, and it was a big surprise for a lot of people, and they're begging for more. But he said he can only do that about once every 2 months, but he'll do it, and that's cool.
I'd take it once every 2 months. It was great.
Yeah, man.
But he said something in his latest video. He said, and this is a direct quote, he said, "Trust without truth is for suckers."
Hmm.
And I was so impressed by that phrase that I Googled it in quotes to see, and nobody else, that is pure Nima Vedotti. He did not get that from anyone. I couldn't find it anywhere on Google.
Say it again.
And trust without truth is for suckers. And our lives really are based on trust. We trust each other. We trust our spouse. We trust, you know, some people trust the government. Some people don't. Yeah. Some people trust different things in their life. You trust your parents. But trust without truth is for suckers. And that's really so foundational. I was really moved by Nima when he said that in that video. But, you know, without trust.
That's the title of this show for the website.
Trust without truth is for suckers.
Yeah, yeah.
But without trust, we can't trade. You can't lay down and sleep at night. You can't, you know, you can't walk down the street without a certain amount of trust. And if our lives are not based on truth and on honesty, then what really is your life based on? You're just lying to yourself. And of all the lies that you face in your life, lying to yourself is maybe the most dangerous. What do you think about that, Michael?
Absolutely. And I also think that, how do I say this? Not having an opinion is, or not wanting to be formed enough to have an opinion is a, I don't know if it's lying, but it's a form of lying. There's another thing in AA that's said a lot. I don't think it's in the book. I don't even know if it's in the NA book, but it's said a lot in meetings. You know, it's not canonical, but whatever that big word is, but it's kind of, you know, said a lot in meetings. And it's, I think it predates NA. I think it came in through NA, but it's, If you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. You ever heard that one?
Yeah, that's a really good one. Yeah. And it's based on, again, being truthful with yourself and not just hiding your eyes from the reality that's around us all the time. You know, and there's so many people who say, well, I don't want to get involved in politics because I just don't want to know about that stuff. And I understand that, and I'm actually sympathetic toward that. I would like to just turn off the TV, never open the internet back up again, never hear about the news, never hear about the tyranny that's going on. But in a sense, you know, to do that is to hide your eyes and pretend it's not there, to stick your fingers in your ears and just go, nah, 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 nah.
Libertarians and ANCAPs and voluntarists have a weird take on it. We have a weird take on it whereby we're very informed generally, but it's not to have an opinion of whether the left or right is correct on a certain issue. It's basically we come to the conclusion that they're all tyrants all the time, and they pretty much are, man. So, you know, it's kind of horrifying when you open your eyes to the idea of the fact that all taxation, all nanny laws, everything governments do is based on theft, aggression, force, fraud, lies. You know, like when Neiman Vedotti and I did that episode one day, the government breaks all 10 commandments all day, every day. And we went through them and showed examples. And it's a fact, man. And once you realize that, once the scales fall from your eyes, you know, once you put on those glasses where you can see the skeleton, see the alien lizard skeleton under every politician. I'm speaking figuratively. I don't really believe that stuff. But, you know, you see that they're all lying and they're all acting and they're all, you know, they say they're, what is it? Someone said, Jim Goad said that every election is just two millionaires fighting over who loves the common man more.
Yeah, Richard Nixon actually said that the way to win in politics is to run as a conservative and then govern as a moderate. And that just, I mean, right in itself, that means he's lying. He's admitting that his whole life is a lie. But that's kind of how both the left and the right do. They, you know, the politicians lie to the voters, and the voters almost want the politicians to keep lying to them so that they can feel comfortable in doing what they do, to go, keep going back and keep voting and keep thinking that things are going to get better and keep thinking that, well, this time this guy is going to do the right thing. But that, they're lying to themselves. They're refusing to be honest with themselves about this process that we call government.
Yeah, there's a really good analogy for that. I did not make it up. I've seen it. I'll bring it up. Is Lucy with Charlie Brown with the football? You know, this time I won't pull it out and let you fall on your butt. And every time she does it. And I would say that people admit they're lying to themselves when they admit that they're voting for the lesser of two evils, which most people do in politics. It's still voting for evil. You know, you're not going to, what has 200 and some years of that gotten us? Like people talk about how America lost its way at some random point, you know, either around 1776 or in the 1950s, Leave It to Beaver years, or the civil rights movement or the hippies or anything that they don't like. And I think that every country lost its way as soon as it wrote anything down and decided to lay and collect taxes, which is in the Constitution. When people say, we got to get back to the Constitution. No, man, you're soaking in it right now. This is the result of 200 and some years of the Constitution.
Yeah, to quote, I lost his name for a minute, but whether the Constitution...
Lysander Spooner.
Some old dead, there you
some
go.
Some old Lysander dead Spooner. Guy. Yeah.
But whether the Constitution really be one thing or another, this much is certain, that it has either authorized such a government as we have had, or it has been powerless to prevent it. And in either case, it is unfit to exist. Lysander Spooner.
Yeah. And he tried to provide services. He tried to start a post office, and he did a better job than the U.S. post office. So the U.S. Post Office outlawed his post office.
Yeah, that's how they play the game.
Yeah, man. They're the biggest bullies in town. Every government, not just this one. Every government in every nation throughout history, period. They're all bullies. They're all the mafia. At least the mafia never goes after the families, though.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Admit it. You hate shopping for Christmas. You do. It's a hassle coupled with a burden, mechanically checking off friends, relatives, and coworkers from your list. You're probably not even religious, but if you are, is buying your cousin some little made-in-China piece of plastic really celebrating the birth of your savior? This holiday season, why buy gifts for friends and relatives? Most of them are status anyway. You should send that money to the Freedom Fiends instead. The Freedom Fiends will use your money to help spread education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. If you want to help provide inoculation from indoctrination, go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post to send your money to the Fiends instead. Because buying crap for unappreciative statist relatives won't get your name on the golden floppy disk of redemption. And if you must shop for Christmas, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you anything extra, and Amazon will save you the danger of holiday drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon pretty much sells everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom, so get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom Fiends, you know who we are. We're just going to start talking. So, Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, it's only a lie if you get caught.
I've heard that, you know, on and off most of my life, where people justify living in a lie or justify lying by saying it's only a lie if you get caught. And that's a lie.
That's a lie. Yep.
It's, things are either true or they're not. You know, there's not this fuzzy world of it's only a lie if you get caught. That's just things. That's a thing that a liar says to themselves, to themselves, to lie to themselves and make them feel better about living in the lie that they live in.
Oh, I feel better about my lies.
I used to know a guy, and we're actually broadcasting into an area where, assuming he's still alive, and he should be, unless something bad happened to him, but I used to know a guy named Lopez, and I won't go any further with his name other than that, because we are broadcasting into an area where he lives.
And that's not his real name.
Yeah, we're just, I'm just trying to be polite here, but Lopez was a liar. I mean, he lied constantly, and he couldn't control it. He would lie.
Was this guy an adult?
He was an adult. He was in his 50s when I knew him. I went
to kindergarten or first grade with someone like that, who like would lie about things he didn't need to lie about. You know, just like, what'd you do this weekend? Oh, I went to the pool on Saturday. Yeah, I would test him. Like, I would lie and say, I was at the pool on Saturday. I didn't see you. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. It was Sunday. Like, he just had to lie, man, like a congenital liar.
Lopez was like that, and he was in his 50s, and I could never you know, he's a really super nice guy. I knew him at work, and if I would be in a project that I was a little over my head on, and he would see that I was over my head, he would volunteer to take time out from his project to come help me. He was that kind of a guy. You know, he was a real team player, using all those corporate phrases. He would do everything he could to help you succeed, and yet he would default to a lie whenever possible, and it was so frustrating. Because you never knew when you could trust the guy. You never knew when he was saying something to you, if it was real or if it was the imaginary world that he walked around in.
Is it real or is it Lopez Rex?
One time, one of the guys that I worked with was a pretty hardcore biker. He told the story about how his, you know, in quotes here, old lady had left him for 2 weeks, and he was on his own for 2 weeks, and he didn't realize, you know, she had done so much stuff around the house that he didn't realize that he didn't have any laundry to go back to work with on after his days off. And so in a panic, in the hours before he had to go to work, he grabs all his laundry, runs down to the laundromat, throws it all in. He realized, this is the middle of the afternoon, he realized that the shirt he was wearing he had worn for several days and it really stunk bad. So he pulls his shirt off, throws it in the laundry with everything else. So literally everything, all the clothes that he owned except his pants and his socks and his shoes were in the laundry washing at the laundromat. And this is out in the desert in California, and he's in the heat in the middle of the afternoon, and he decides, man, I'd really like a beer. So he walks next door to the bar, and they had a no shirt, no shoes, no service policy. And I think, I could be wrong, but I think that's actually California law. You're not allowed to be in a bar without a shirt on. And I could be wrong on that, but that was my impression back in the day. And so the bartender there, even though he knew him, he wouldn't serve this guy any beer as long as he didn't have a shirt on. So he went back to the laundromat, and he's still burning up. It's like 120 degrees in the desert, and it's just miserable in the laundromat with all the humidity. And he digs through the trash, and he finds a little girl's shirt. Now, this guy telling the story is like 26 years old, right? And he's skinny. He's a biker. He drinks too much, and there were other substances involved that kept him skinny. And so he takes the shirt, he whips out his pocket knife, he cuts the arms off of it, he cuts the neck out of it, and he pulls it over his body, and it's just skin tight, barely covers, you know, the top half of his body. Goes back to get a beer. The bartender is laughing so hard, gives him a free beer. So the guy tells us this story, and Lopez feels the need to tell the exact same story as if it happened to him. Except Lopez is in his 50s. He lives in an upper middle class neighborhood in Ridgecrest, California. He has a wife that he's been with for over 30 years, and he owns a washer and a dryer. And yet he still tries to lie himself into the exact same story that he just heard. It was so sad and pathetic that we all just said, there was probably a half a dozen of us in the building where this story was being recited. And as Lopez told his version of the exact same story, moments after the other guy had told what really happened to him, we were just all struck with how pathetic it was that a human being had to make up a lie like this to in order to try to get himself to be part of the conversation and, you know, sound like he was important and sound like he was one of the guys, instead of just enjoying the story from somebody else, because it was a good story. It had like, it was almost a hero's journey. You know, it had a beginning, a middle, and an end. In the end, there was a hero at the end where he finally wins the beer at the, you know, it had all the classics of a great story, but Lopez couldn't let it go. He had to write himself into the story and twist it. And I think there's so many people in life that have to write themselves into the story, and they can't just let truth lay out there, so much so that they're willing to go to any ridiculous level to make things more comfortable for themselves rather than be comfortable in their own skin and their own lives.
That's so square. I think they become politicians, man, most of them.
Yeah.
We'll be back.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Hounding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
Freedom Fiends. So, you know, most of the stations we're on, Ben, are conservative stations. We're libertarian, which just means, you know, conservatives say they want to have government so small they can drown in a bathtub. And libertarians are people who want government so small that it's theorized about by particle physicists, as Davy Barker says. And I write to, you know, I call stations up and then I write to them and I send them a thing and then they write me back. And, you know, I've probably called 1,400 stations and we're on 34. But that's a lot. I mean, that's more, 34 more than most people listening to us are on. So I built that. Obama didn't help. He just got in the way. But I got an interesting email back from a station program director this week. I wrote to him and sent him my little pitch and, you know, I tried calling him on the phone first. I always try calling him on the phone. We are a teaching hospital. So, you know, when you start your radio station, I'll tell you, or your show, I'll tell you, you gotta call him. You can't just cold email him. You gotta cold call him and then follow up with an email. But if I can't get a hold of someone after two or three calls, I'll send him an email anyway. And I wrote this guy an email and he wrote back and I said, yeah, we got this libertarian, feisty libertarian show, The Freedom Fiends, 7 days a week, blah, 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 blah. Here's a link. Check it out. And, he wrote me back and said, no, thank you. We are a conservative station. And conservative was in all caps. Like, no, no, that's too freaky. So you're going to talk about the difference between liberals and conservatives and the difference in how they lie, right?
Yeah, really. You know, they both groups, people who call themselves liberals and people who call themselves conservatives, if they were really honest with themselves, they wouldn't be able to honestly call themselves liberal and conservatives, because the roots of these two thoughts, of these two political thoughts, are so mired and so wishy-washy, and there's really no standard that either of them can point to and say, look, this is what liberal is and this is what conservative is. It's kind of a thing that they make up in their own mind to explain themselves, and then they join a team that they think is kind of like themselves. So that might be Democrats or Republicans, or they might call themselves independents, but really deep down inside they're conservative or whatever. But really it's just layers of fooling yourself and not having a solid foundation to lay your thoughts and your beliefs on. And that's the difference in libertarianism. Now, there are a lot of people out there who think libertarian just means you're a pothead or whatever. And Michael and I both, and I'm saying this to the entire listening audience that's there right now, neither of us has anything to do with illicit drugs or smoke pot or none of those things like that. We're not involved in that. We're not pro-pot. What we are is libertarians in the sense that we do not believe that it's right for someone to initiate aggression on another person. And the difference between that and having a political belief where you think it's okay to tax people to accomplish the things you think are important, but it's not okay to tax people to do something you don't think it's important. See, that's a wishy-washy thing that depends on whoever it is that's saying it. So one person might think, well, it's important that we defend our nation, so it's important for me to rob you so that I can choose how to spend that money to defend our nation. And then somebody else says, well, you know, it's really important that the poor not starve to death. So that means it's important that I rob you to pay for my pet projects to help the poor, which can be argued whether or not it really does help the poor. Just like the other argument, it can be argued whether or not military spending actually makes us safer or not. You don't want to think about those things. You don't want to think about, am I robbing you to feed the poor, and do the poor actually get fed? Or is it a good thing to even feed the poor? And you don't want to think about, am I robbing you to protect our nation from foreign aggressors? And does that actually protect us? Or does that create enemies that hate us? You don't want to think about that because you don't want to face the honesty that comes with that kind of thoughts.
I'd say, you know, I'd say another truism that works to describe government really well is, When the only tool you have is a hammer, you see a hammer, you see how's it going?
If the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail.
Yeah, that's it. It's if the only tool, I mean, government has every tool under the sun, you know, literally every tool, but the methodology of using every tool is like bash things, threaten things, blow things up, shoot things, jail things, rob things. Basically, be the biggest and toughest guy in the playground. And I'd say that's one place conservatives really kind of dupe themselves, is thinking that's a good thing. Like, you know, thinking, well, they'd be better not mess with America because we'll come over and kick your butt. And we have the strongest army in the world and blah, blah, blah. You know, like, as if might makes right. And self-defense is a great thing. I carry a gun, but I don't go, you know, I don't go bomb people in another nation or in any nation, you know, because their neighbors did something, which is what all armies ever do all over the world throughout history, you know?
Yeah, you know, this idea, too, that you mentioned earlier, that people always vote for the lesser of evils and then they justify it in their mind. I'm thinking of a quote from a guy named David Gordon, who is a really smart person, and he said, the people like that, he said, they put one in mind of the man who reads so much about how bad smoking is for your health that he gives up reading. And that's kind of in the same logic. It's like, well, if you know that you're voting for the lesser of evils, why are you asking for evil? Why don't you just stop voting and stop giving your personal authorization to evil? Why don't you recognize that government is evil? That government only exists by stealing from some people to give to other people. And that's not right if I do it. It's not right if you do it. And it's not right if a guy in a uniform does it. Or if a guy with a title like judge or you know, president or governor. If they're robbing, it's wrong. And they are robbing. Every penny that they tax is robbery. We just call it something different, and then we feel better about it.
Yeah. Yeah, what did you say? You said there's only two ways wealth is created, and I added a third. Explain that.
Yeah, I'm going by a guy named Franz Oppenheimer, and he wrote a really good book that is worth having in your library. It's called The State by Franz Oppenheimer. And in that book, he goes through and examines all governments throughout history. He doesn't list every single one of them, but he had done that in his studies. And he shows that throughout history, there's only two ways to acquire wealth. The first is through peaceful production and trade. You know, you actually work, you put sweat into something, you put thought into something, or you exchange something that you have with someone else voluntarily. So that's production and trade. This is, he calls, the economic means. And the only other way to create wealth is to steal it from somebody who's already produced it. And that's called the political means. So there's really the peaceful means, which is production and trade or the economic means, and there's theft, whether you call it government or whether you call it taxation.
Well, I've heard there's three ways to create wealth. One is to earn it, one is to steal it, and one is to print it. But printing, government's printing money is basically a sub form of theft.
Yeah, it's exactly theft in the same way that, you know, that if you just started making your own money, the government wouldn't tolerate that. They would shut you down. They would arrest you. They would put you in jail for counterfeiting because it takes away from the wealth of all the rest of the money that exists. But when the government does it, they call it money expansion or they call it expanding the economy or they call it, you know, QE2 or whatever phrase that they lie to you by covering the fact that they're just creating more money. It's actually taking away from the value of the money that already exists. So it's just a different form of wealth, a different form of theft, a different form of taxation. They just don't call it that. Again, it's back to the honesty question.
Yeah.
And I would strongly recommend that book. It's one of the books that I keep with me, The State by Franz Oppenheimer. It's really a good book, and there's a second book that I would want to recommend also by Albert J. Nock that's called Our Enemy, the State. And he was a student of Franz Oppenheimer, and essentially what he did was he took Franz Oppenheimer's The State and kind of wrote a second edition to it and called it Our Enemy, the State. It's a really good book. It's an easy read. Again, it's a book that I keep with me. I have it here in our motorhome. We haven't said this, my wife and I, are full-time RVers. We live in our motorhome. We travel around the country, seeing this beautiful country of ours that we live in and meeting lots of different people all around. And it's really a lot of fun.
And do you want to expand a little on how liberals lie? We talked about how conservatives lie, but.
Sure. You know, first off, in the 1800s, if you said someone is a liberal, it would not have meant.
It meant libertarian, what it means today. Basically.
Yeah.
Classic liberal.
Liberals in the 1800s were people who wanted liberty. Yeah. Well, and not just for themselves. They wanted liberty for everyone to do. As long as no one aggressed upon someone else, they wanted to be left alone and they wanted to leave everyone alone.
Yeah.
But around 1900, a new group of people called the progressives.
Progressive, pretty much, just a little more progressive. Yeah.
They pretty much, and really that's just a code word for socialist, you know. I mean, honestly, a progressive
is
a socialist.
It's really funny when people who are progressives get upset if you call them a socialist because they know they're a socialist, you know. I mean, they study communists and like them. There are people that, you know, one of Obama's right-hand ladies, you know, stood up in front of a bunch of people and said, yeah, I admire Chairman Mao. I mean, that is, it's kind of mind-blowing that they change the name for what they do every few decades and think they can get away with it. But they're socialists, and I would say all Republicans are socialists too, except probably Ron Paul, and he's not a politician anymore. You know, anybody that wants to have any kind of government regulation, taxation, you know, I mean, the military, that's redistributing wealth. You know, it's, you know, I'm not saying anything bad about military members. I'm just saying, like, having a standing army is against what, you know, the better of the founding fathers wanted.
Yeah, actually, wow.
Madison, Jefferson, one of those guys.
Jefferson. Yeah, actually, Jefferson said that the two worst, and I'm misquoting him here, but really the two most dangerous things for America would be federal banks, you know, national banks, and a standing army. And of those two things, he actually said that a national bank was worse of the two.
Well, because without a national bank that can just basically print money at whim, you can't have a standing army, and you can't have all the yummy progressive, all the projects that all the progressives think are really yummy.
Yeah.
Yeah, for pointing guns where they want to point. We'll talk more about progressives and how they lie when we get back from this trip to the market. Free market.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most of our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Having outgrown childish libertarian fantasies, I now believe in worms! What is Libertarians Against Humanity? It's the only unofficial Cards Against Humanity expansion pack by libertarians, for libertarians, and against libertarians. Libertarians Against Humanity is free to play online, or join the Indiegogo campaign to get physical copies and other perks to play with friends or status you haven't defued yet. Because if we don't laugh, the status win.
Not recommended for faint heart, thin skins, or those with easily rustled jeans. Consult a physician if you experience common blood pressure or laughter lasts longer than 4 hours.
That's libertariansagainsthumanity.com.
Freedom Fiends, yeah.
So, in this segment, we're going to finish up with the politics of lying and the lies of politicians and the lies that are the underpinnings of the creation of politics in general. And then in hour two, we're going to talk about personal lying and people lying, as opposed to people outsourcing it to professional liars. I still say, you know, the kid I went to kindergarten with and the guy that you knew out in the high desert, if I'm assuming that correctly, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That those people who just congenitally had to lie, I think a lot of those people grew up to be politicians. And it's kind of mind-blowing when you read about the histories of, you know, major politicians in America and elsewhere, like what they have lied about in their life, and they're still politicians. Like they still are held up as great men that people want to vote for, you know, like all the neocon warmongering right wingers who were draft dodgers, and, you know, all the left wingers that were sleeping with everything that moved, and, you know, stealing stuff for their brother-in-law and giving all the contracts out to everybody that did them favors. Both sides do that, and bigger lies, and, you know, saying that they had military service they didn't, and just lie. And they're still great men to a lot of people. It's sad.
Yeah. You know, it's really sad because these people, the voters, the voting public, almost want the politicians to lie to them so that they can feel better about, you know, being a part of this process, and so that they can feel better, you know, about doing this. I'm thinking specific, I'll pick on my brother. You know, he was a big Bush supporter for years and years, and I would try to talk to him about it, and I would point out specific things that Bush had lied about and ways that Bush was not at all conservative. And the only thing he could come back with was that, well, Kerry would have been worse, or, you know, Clinton would have been worse, or, and he never would allow himself to come to grips with the fact that he's supporting a guy based on lies, and that guy is continuing to lie to him, and he's fogging his own mind so that he can feel better about believing those lies.
Yeah.
It's really sad.
In any kind of a free market, that would not happen. You know, if you didn't have to choose from the monopoly of one or the other, you know, like say there were three people in, to say that you were a farmer and you needed hay and on a regular basis, and there were three people in town that sold hay in bulk amounts that were enough for you. And, you know, one of them would sell you moldy hay and say it's not moldy regularly. And one of them was habitually late and didn't deliver as many pounds or, you know, bales, tons of hay as you had ordered. And the third one always delivered what you ordered on time with a smile. You know, would you say, well, I got to go with the one of the two bad guys because that's all we got? No, you'd go with the good guy. Which brings me really quick to the kind of lies that liberals believe more than conservatives, but conservatives still kind of believe. And it's the lie that government is good. Liberals believe that government does a better job, you know, with kids than families do. They believe that people can't function without governments. They believe that the bigger the government, the better. They believe that we're always three laws away from perfection. Conservatives believe these things too, but conservatives at least give lip service to the idea of you can't trust government. People running for office say you can't trust government. That's a big thing now. You know, I mean, not just the Tea Party candidates, but any Republican influenced by the Tea Party, they know that they have to sound like an anarchist who hates government when they're running for office. And then once they're elected, they can do whatever damage they want. But yeah, so the lie that government is good is, you know, the or necessary, or you could, you know, well, it's the it's not a perfect system, but it's the only one we got. Like, those are all lies. And, you know, there's a meme going around that shows some Aztecs throwing a virgin into a volcano and one saying to the other, well, it's not a perfect system, but it's the only one we've got. And continuing to vote for and, like, be an apologist for the expanding police state, the expanding government, you know, believing that juries, grand juries return equitable assessments of people's behavior, believing that, you know, well, the government, due process, it must be good. It's not fair, man, the way they run it. They have turned it into a racket where the lawyers win, the government wins, and the people lose 9 times out of 10 or more. And people believe it's the we got to do it because it's the only system we have, man. And I'm not saying like any violent revolution thing or anything like that. I'm saying a mental revolution of like just withdrawing consent from that kind of stuff. It's not going to just make it go away overnight, but you can't sit around saying it's a good thing. You have to speak out at, every chance you get while you still can, man. And that's what we're doing here on the Freedom Fiends. We'll be back for hour two of lies, lies, damn statistics, and more lies with trust without truth is for suckers on the Freedom Fiends. Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com. Do you believe in free speech? Jay Raven had her True Shives YouTube channel taken down. We believe this censorship was wrong, and we believe the channel is a clear example of free speech. Many people are bullied on the internet, but Jay Raven actually stood up to the bullying. She has filed a self-defense lawsuit against the individuals who took down the channel. The outcome of this suit could be very important to the future of free speech. Learn more at TrueShibes.com. That's Tango, Romeo, Uniform, Sierra, Hotel, India, Bravo, Echo, Sierra.com. TrueShibes.com. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level, at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. Broadcasting through the Libertarian Reindoctrination Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza, on the artificial satellite Live Bear 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. My name is, well, my name's not important. Only what I have to say is important. And I'm talking to Mr. Ben Stone, the bad Quaker. Are you there, sir? Are you safe? Have you been contacted by the government?
I'm here. I am safe, and I have not been contacted by the government.
Outstanding, Ensign. All right. First hour, we talked about the lies of the government. Second hour, we're going to talk about y'all's lies. We're going to talk about the lies of the people, how people lie to themselves and lie to each other, and why it irritates us. Why does it irritate you, Ben?
You know, even beyond just outright lies, I think dishonesty is there are levels of dishonesty where it goes from an outright lie to deception to not following through with your word, not doing what you said you were going to do within the time frame that you said you were going to do.
I would put a lesser one below that, and it's being flaky. When people are flaky, they can be good people and they don't mean to be evil and they're not lying as far as they know. But they're really wasting your time. And that's a mild form of lying and stealing, I'd say. Although, it's up to you to put up with it. And I encourage people to step away from people like that.
It's really hard to do business with people like that. It's hard to do business with anybody that you can't have a complete trust in. And anything that breaks that trust, anything that even wears away at that trust, makes it really difficult to have the confidence that it takes to really seriously do business with them on a daily basis or to work with them to accomplish any kind of task.
Yeah. And I've had a few experiences in the past week of people, not that I'm doing monetary business with, but that I'm doing projects with, or that I'm trying to help. Like, you know, I'm trying to help them get a reality TV show or something. And, you know, I write them an email and I ask them three or four questions that I need to know to, like, write this other person. Or I'm trying to set a time to do something with them. And I'm like, well, we can do this or this on this day or this day at this time or this time. Like, you know, two or three choices, really short emails. Like, I tend to write emails that are like one or two lines and then a paragraph break, you know, a full two space and then another line, like really short paragraphs. I break them up, which is a tip for doing business with people. Don't make things one long block of text. Try to break up into separate parts. You know, do you want to do this or this or this or this and this or this? Like you lay out what the questions are. And people, and often it's people that are like, they check email once a day. So like, they write me back, they answer one out of the three questions, and then I know they're not going to be on for 24 more hours and I have to call them, or I don't have their phone number. It's like, that kind of stuff is not dishonest, it's not lying, but it's flaky. And on the continuum of evil, it's on the continuum of evil. It's just way down at the minimal end.
Yeah, you're wasting somebody else's time, and it's really frustrating in the case that you're talking about because you're trying to help somebody. You're not doing it for profit.
You were one of them. You were the least of the four that happened this week. You were the least egregious of all of them, but you were one of them. But I explained it to you, and you learned, and I know you won't do it again.
Yeah, it reminded me very much because what had happened, just so the listeners know, I had emailed Michael and then Michael emailed me back in response, but I had gotten off the internet and went off doing other things and was gone for, I don't know, hours or something.
Like an hour. It was for something we were doing today. It was basically, you know, the thing that we did before we did the show. And it was, you know, something you wanted to do and I wanted to do. And we'd agreed a certain time of that, of the day, we would write each other and say, when can you do it? And I wrote you and said, when can you do it? And you said, I got to get coffee first. That wasn't an answer. I don't know exactly how long. That could be, you know, 5 minutes. That could be an hour and a half. And then I wrote back after like a half hour and said, I really need to know what time we're going to do this. Give me a window of time we can do it. And you didn't write back. And a half hour later, you wrote back and said like, oh, I was out. Sorry. And that still didn't answer my question, you know. And I sat there like, putting everything else on hold, waiting to be ready for you. You know, when I said, when do you want to do it? You should have said, oh, between 45 and 50 minutes from now. Or you should have said in 5 minutes, or you should have said, you know, in an hour or whatever. It just, I was, you know, we had something to do and I was kind of on hold about it. I'm not taking you to task and saying you're a horrible person. I'm saying like, that's the kind of thing. And you're someone I can name and give the example. And you could be a teaching hospital subject. You know, the other three that happened this week were more irritating than that. And in one case, I was trying to help somebody achieve their life goal, like something they're working really hard to do, you know, get a reality TV show. And, you know, it's someone I don't even really know very well. And I was just like, hey, someone contacted me about doing a reality TV show. They're legit. They do stuff for, you know, Discovery Channel, et cetera. I thought of you because you've been trying to create, you know, you've created pilots for a reality TV show for, you know, off the grid living, whatever. And, you know, write me, answer these questions three, and I'll give you an introduction to the person. And, you know, they answered one of the questions and then 24 hours later, I wrote back and answered another one of the questions, but didn't answer the third one. And finally, I gave an introduction for them to this producer without giving them all the information they needed because I wanted it off my plate, you know. So when someone's trying to help you, especially read their emails carefully, answer their questions, when you're trying to work with somebody and they ask you three short questions, answer their questions. Don't just say, yeah, when it's not a yes or no answer. You know, that was another thing someone did this week. Another thing was somebody, I'll do any interview anywhere, anytime, pretty much, but I don't like to do interviews that are panel discussions where there's four or five people on Skype. The audio quality is so bad and you can't get a word in edgewise. And it's like, it's a waste of my time. And there's somebody who had me on one of those before, and it was a cluster and whatever. And I decided I'm never going to do one of those again. And so the guy writes me back a year later and says, hey, I want you to be on my show this week. And I said, well, I'll do it if it's just you, you know, if it's not a panel thing. And he wrote back and said, yeah, let's do it at this day, at this time. And I said, okay, I'm there. And then, like, you know, the day before it, he wrote me and said, oh, by the way, it's going to be a panel thing. And I'm like, no, you know, he didn't really lie to me, but he didn't give me all the, if he told me up front it was going to be a panel discussion, I would have said no. And, you know, it's the kind of thing of like that wasted like an hour of my time going back and forth with the guy. So don't waste people's time, people. Give them all the information they need. Answer all their questions. To do any less is somewhere between lies and being,
and just
someone,
rudeness.
Being someone you don't want, people don't want to deal with. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and when you related these situations to me, I thought immediately of my experiences in the aerospace industry. Without naming a company name, actually, I could name several company names that this was common in, but I worked in advanced engineering in a major aerospace corporation. And it was like every manager you had to deal with, you send them an email with four clear questions or three clear questions, each one separated exactly the way you described. They would read the first question, half answer it, and that's it. That's all you'd get from them.
Yeah.
And you're like, you know, you've got a multi-million dollar program here that we're working on, and I need these questions answered so that we can move ahead on this major contract. And you didn't take the time out. I took the time out of my day to do this work. This is work that we're getting paid for. And you didn't take time out of your day to acknowledge the importance of these questions and answer them. And it was so frustrating. And it happened literally every single time that you tried to deal with a manager. And it brought back to me that old comparison that a lot of people in industry know, that they advance, the worst workers become the most successful managers because they only halfway do their job, and you want to get them out of the workforce because they're a burden to everybody else in the workforce.
Yeah.
So what do? You make them a boss.
It's the Peter principle, you know, which is a thing from the one of the first management books. It was from the 60s. And it was basically the idea that people are promoted to their level of incompetence and then stay there. You know, you're doing a good job, you get a promotion. You're doing a good job, you get a promotion. You're doing a good job, you get a promotion. You're doing a good job, you get another promotion. And then you can't get promoted because you're not good at that point, but you're not bad enough to fire, but you're not good enough to promote, and you get stuck there. And that's the way with vertically integrated companies.
Yeah, it's a level of mediocrity that kind of infects every single corporation and government as well.
Yeah, and that was a company that was doing a lot of work for the government. It was aerospace, so it was like, you know, pretty good for government work is the joke, but it's true. It's kind of ironic because that company is a company that spends millions of dollars on sending everyone to seminars. I'm not going to say the name of it, but it's a management and oversight environment that has a culty sounding name, that has a lot of culty sounding aspects. And the people who developed it and the CEO of that company at one point wrote a book that was a bestseller on like why that's the way to run things. But I've never studied that thing, but I'm pretty sure it included like clarity of communication, didn't it?
It did. I was forced to study it actually, and was not given a choice as to whether or not to read that book. But yeah, that's exactly it. And yet, I mean, it was so common that I'm saying literally, because I'm using that in its true context, literally every communication with every manager was exactly like that, because they just took their job with so little amount of seriousness, and they were so, excuse me.
And they were so unfireable too.
They were. Once you get to a certain level, as long as you're showing up and not stealing, they will never fire you. That's the two things.
And the funny thing is, Americans are really upset that a lot of jobs are getting outsourced. You know, now it's the Chinese. When I was a kid, it was the Japanese. Japanese companies don't put up with that.
No.
You know, I mean, people would be shamed, and their families would hang their head in shame if somebody sent an email like that in Japan, you know, in a corporate environment.
Yeah, all you'd have to do is then forward it to that person's boss and say, you know, I asked this guy and he wouldn't answer me.
Yeah.
But if you do that in American culture, in the American environment of business, then that upper boss goes to the lesser boss and says, hey, your guy's causing problems. Do something about it.
Yeah, it's kind of... You know, it's kind of the American way. It exists in other countries, but definitely not in Japan, and definitely not in China. You know, and probably not in India. You know, the three countries that are like kicking Americans' butt in manufacturing. Yeah. So American exceptionalism. If you want to say you have American exceptionalism, be clear with email communication. That's a start. We'll be back after this trip to the market.
Listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squigelts from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech as hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
This is Mr. Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends talking to Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker from BadQuaker.com, one of the regular co-hosts here on the Freedom Fiends, one of the best co-hosts on the Freedom Fiends, not to denigrate anybody. There's some great people doing the Freedom Fiends, but I really think that Ben Stone is the one that people are going to be listening to his episodes on the Fiends 50 or 100 years from now. I really do.
Oh, shucks.
I think all of them will be listened to because we're making media for the future. This isn't just daily radio. We do this every day, and we don't make a lot of money at it. If you want to go to freedomfiends.com and send a donation, it helps out with expenses. We usually give our ads away to nonprofits and not-for-profits and things that don't even have those government designations because they don't want to be involved in the, you know, like the Democrats, like, you know, use the IRS to target conservative groups. The groups that we give free ad space to don't even like register with the IRS. Like they don't even involve money. They're just, you know, selling ideas like antiwar.com, Libertarians Against Humanity, and the Campaign for a Longer Leash, which are important things that people should be supporting, and you don't even need money to support them. I guess antiwar.com, you could send some money to them, but Campaign for a Longer Leash doesn't even ask for money, and Libertarians Against Humanity sells things that people want that are goods that are good. And so yeah, man, we're go
Bitcoin,
ahead.
Bitcoin not bombs.
Bitcoin not bombs. Definitely. Go to bitcoin.bombs. Go to Shiny Badges, which is you can buy things there. It's a good site. This is the first time I think I've ever done like what they call a live read, which is where the you know, the host says, I endorse, hardly endorse these products and or services. But the difference between our show and other shows when they do that, we're not getting paid to do it, and we really love the things we're endorsing.
Yeah, there's a huge difference there, and that's not putting down anybody else that gets paid to do that.
No,
we don't have
them.
A problem.
We have a different model.
Yeah, and our whole show, really, we should point out that our whole show is not about you know, trying to satisfy the audience. It's not about bringing the audience in. It's about speaking the truth, truth to power. That's what we're about.
Yep. And that's dangerous. And we'll probably end up in Gitmo for it, but, or just beat up by some crazy person or shot on the street. But, that's how it goes, man.
But trust without truth is for suckers.
Yeah, man. So we're not into that. We're this is a public service. I have a day job, man. I write technical books, technical manuals, and do technical writing for a day job, and do audio editing and video editing for other people. And this is my hobby. I make a little money at it, but basically enough to pay expenses and buy a burrito at the end of the week afterwards. So we want to talk about truth, man. What do you got about truth, Ben, and lies from people?
You know, I kind of live in luxury, and I don't mean that as far as, I mean, we have a nice motorhome that we drive around in, and it's worth a lot of money, and we worked hard for that money to get it to pay for this motorhome and to live this life. But I don't mean that when I say I live in luxury. What I mean is I live in luxury because for so many years, I worked in industry, I worked in the corporation world, I worked for other people, did that so that my family would have a good life. And in doing so, I had to be around people that I didn't like. I had to be around liars. I had to be around people who were not trustworthy. I had to be around people that I could not depend on. Even ones that were relatively honest, that I still couldn't depend on them. But I had to be around them. I had to work with them because I had to raise my family and provide housing and food and clothing and so forth. And now I don't have to do that. I can choose who I'm around. I can choose my friends. And I choose not to be around people who are dishonest. That is such an abundance of luxury for me that I can't say how much I appreciate that.
Yeah. And you built that. You and your wife decided to do that. You retired a little early. You know, you're not living in a house, too. It's not like you have a nice motorhome and a house or two or three somewhere. You know, you actually have a house that you're renting out and in the process of selling to cover expenses. You're not on vacation in your giant motorhome. You're living in your giant motorhome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a tight life. It's not as expensive as people might think to live like that. We have a very tight budget. We don't live in extravagance or anything like that. But we make that sacrifice specifically for the reason I just said, so that we can choose who to be around. We have that opportunity to say, you know, that guy is dishonest or he's annoying or whatever, and I don't have to be around him.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. Meow. Meow. Yeah, uh-huh. Freedom Fiends, we'll be back.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
And this is the Freedom Fiends. I'm Michael Dean. We got Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker. That was a song called My God is Woman by my band Slish, which is not the band I'm known for. I'm known for a band called Bomb. Not that well known. It's not like I was a rock star or anything. I was signed to Warner Brothers and I toured the world, but yeah, we didn't sell a lot of records. We kind of irked the record label and got dropped. But we put out one record with them, and we put out 3 records on indies, and always, you know, did it ourselves no matter what, whether anybody was supporting it or not, because that's what you got to do when you believe in something and you're on a mission like we are with this show.
I did it my way.
I did. I like that song. And the drummer in that band, Slish, that we were just listening to, is this guy named Michael Urbano, who played in He's played on a bunch of top 10 records. He's played on Sheryl Crow's records, John Hiatt's records, Cracker. And he was a session guy on those bands, and he was in the band Smash Mouth. I don't know who he's playing with now, but probably somebody famous that I don't listen to. He does a lot of kind of country rockish, top 40-ish. I like everything he's done, actually. I just don't keep up with him. But when I was in that band, we were playing this tiny club. You know, he's kind of slumming to play with us. Basically, he was trying to get us signed. It was after my band Bomb. He was trying to get us signed. And he wanted to be, you know, kind of like start a boutique production company where, like, he would find a cool band, play drums on the record, play some showcases in little clubs, get the band signed, you know, play on the record, and then take a cut, which is an honest service that, you know, more people should do. And it's, I like it that he played too, that he wasn't just, you know, oh, I'm going to find bands and make them stars. It was like he was going to find bands and help develop them. And I was recently sober, and so was the other guy in the band that wasn't him. Michael Urbano was sober, but, you know, for longer. I was recently sober 20 years ago when that band was happening. And basically me and the other guy didn't know how to live life on life's terms yet and hadn't figured all this stuff out. And we're just screaming at each other to the point where Michael Urbano just walked away. So when we were playing a showcase with that band, there was this, Michael Urbano is a really good drummer, but he's not an amazing drummer. He's not a mind-blowing drummer. He's just a really, really good drummer. In addition to being a really, really good drummer, he works really well with others. You know, he can show up and play any kind of music with very little rehearsal. You know, he's never like, oh, I'm late because I'm hungover in a bad mood or my girlfriend left me or whatever. Like, he would show up no matter what. And producers like that, bands like that, club owners like that, and record companies like that, recording engineers like that. Everybody likes that. But musicians are often really, temperamental Flaky. People. Yeah, and especially drummers. Like, drummers hit things for a living, so they're really temperamental. And I was playing one time in this little club doing the showcase with Michael Urbano on drums, and there's this other drummer there who was a stellar drummer, a mind-blowing drummer, a your jaw drops when he plays drummer. And, you know, he was like, this mind-blowing drummer was basically unemployed. He was like, man, I wish I could get some of the gigs Michael Urbano gets. How'd you get that guy to play with you? And man, I wonder how he does it. And like, I was like, he's reliable, man. You're not, you know, I hated to like drop truth on the guy, but I did. I'll say who that was. It was a guy named Brain, and he later ended up being the drummer for Primus. So I don't know if I helped him or not, but he later became reliable enough to be in a really big band. But at that time he wasn't. And people like reliability. It's part of honesty, you know, as we talked about before. And another thing about people and making it in the world, and I'm not saying being famous in the world, but like, you know, having something to do, someone to love, and something you're passionate about, either that you do for a living or, you know, that you do on the side from your living. I would say the first thing is like, don't quit your day job. You know, I still have a day job and I'm doing radio, but I love doing radio and we're pretty good at it. So, and we're creating it. We're bringing out a good message and we're teaching others to do the same. But I would also say one of the biggest impediments, other than like drugs and alcohol, you know, people have problems with that. Other than that, I think the biggest problem is toxic people, you know. And someone doesn't have to be beating you up to be toxic, you know, a parent or a sibling or a spouse or a family member that, you know, constantly belittles you or doesn't believe in you or like believes in you even though you're stupid and you're never going to go anywhere with what you're doing. I mean, that's almost another form of it. But I've cut a lot of people out of my life, and I'm not like people that say you got to defoo anyone that anyone that votes. I'm not like that. Like, I still have status in my life. I still have I don't believe in the against me argument. I still have people that are silly with their beliefs, but it's only because they do something else really well. Like, I don't even keep family members, you know, I don't keep in contact with family members that are time wasters, you know. And I wrote a book called User's Manual for the Human Experience. I'll link it in the show notes. It's a good book. You should check it out. You can buy it on Amazon or you can get it free. You can download a PDF or an audiobook of me reading it and sounding like a stone surfer, even though I am neither. People say I sound like a stone surfer, but I'm not, dude.
But what price is better than free? I mean, it's a user's manual for the human experience. How can you get better than free for that?
Yeah, there's about 25 reviews of it on Amazon that give it 5 stars and say it's the best book people have ever read. So, and I don't know most people that wrote those. So somebody likes it.
You know, it's really important to be able to evaluate the people that are around you and not, like you're saying, not necessarily completely like, you know, you are anathema to me. I will never speak to you or say your name. And you don't have to go that far with it. But you can look around at the people that are around you and you can see who is living off of you. Who is like, didn't you talk about mosquito people?
Yeah, people that are like mosquitoes. They're not, you know, they're not dangerous. They're not like destroying your life, but they just kind of pick at you like mosquitoes. You know, there's kind of an irritation. You can slap them away figuratively, but they still come back until you just get them out of your life. Soul mosquitoes, man.
Soul mosquitoes. That's the phrase you used. Yeah.
Yep.
And being free of irritants like that. And again, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have, you know, created some kind of classification where you will never speak to them again, no matter what. You will not acknowledge that they are alive, they are dead to you. But you can still remove them from your life and remove them from the influences in your life and live a freer life by doing so.
Yeah, another thing I recommend in very select cases with very certain people, types of people, you know, some people I just recommend completely cutting out of your life if they are physically or emotionally abusive to you. But that's not a wide range, a wide percentage of people, but everybody has somebody in their life that's dragging them down, at least one person. And it's often like someone that, you know, it not a spouse, not a family, not close friend. It's often kind of like a hanger on friend that you just put up with because you don't want to be rude or because they're kind of entertaining or something, but they're dragging you down. And one thing I recommend with some people, especially with family members that are really problematic, is a limited no contact, a limited time full no contact. And I explain how I've done that in my life and what the results were in a couple chapters of User's Manual for the Human Experience. And it's a tough thing to do, especially with someone that's family. But and it's basically like saying, you know, for a year, I'm not going to talk to you. And here's why. Like other people who say, like, you have to defoo people and anyone who believes in the government, like that is ridiculous. And it's also like, you know, it's usually permanent when they do it. And there's like no going back on it and no content. You know, the person drops off the face of the earth and leaves a quick note. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, you know, something like where you tell the person, for a year, I'm not going to talk to you. And you tell them why. You say, like, you know, when you do this, it makes me feel this. When you do that, it makes me feel that. You're doing this and it's destructive to you. You know, and really think about it, not do it on a whim. And basically say, I'll check back with you in a year. If you contact me even once, you know, in that time, I'm starting the clock over. And of course, there'd be exceptions, like, you know, if there was something you guys didn't negotiate ahead of time or the person was too mad to negotiate, like, you know, let's say you have the title for their car or something and they need to get it or they're going to lose their car, like that they could make an exception for. But, you know, not make exceptions for like makeup emergencies, you know, it has to be a real thing. But I explain it in detail and I'm no expert. I'm no therapist. I just talk about what I did in my life and what the results, the positive results were, you know, during that year, after the year and down the line when the person was back in my life. So there you go.
Yeah. And, you know, just bragging about your book a little bit, let me clarify, I haven't actually read the whole thing. I've kind of skimmed around through it, but I'm going largely by my daughter read it, and she really likes it, and I have a high level of respect for her opinion on things like books and stuff like that. And I really do think that, you know, sometimes in life, it's just good to pick up something like a book that somebody else has put effort into based on their own life experiences and learn from what they had to suffer through rather than having to suffer through it yourself.
Well, yeah, the smart thing to do is to learn from your mistakes. The smarter thing to do is to learn from other people's mistakes.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how we gain wisdom. There's a vast difference between knowledge and wisdom. Like, I can sit down and read a manual for operating a machine, and I can know everything about operating that machine and still not be bright enough wisdom-wise to know how to use that machine in a way that makes me money or that makes my life better or whatever. There's a real wide difference, and a lot of people have a lot of information and they don't have that learned wisdom. And wisdom is passed through, you either get it through years and years of personal experiences, or you get it from learning from other people who have gone through those personal experiences.
Yeah.
And the most painless way to learn it is letting other people feel the pain and then you learning that lesson from them.
Yeah. There's a lot of pain that comes with a human life, but there's less than there needs to be in most human lives.
Yeah, you don't have to feel all that pain. You don't have to go through every single emotion and every single experience if you can learn it from someone else.
Yeah, there's a lot of mistakes that can be made for you if you're willing to look at someone who's gone down the path you're wanting to go down and ask them for help. Or, I don't ask people for advice. I ask them for, like, experience, strength, and hope, as they say in AA. And really, a lot of that is just, instead of saying, like, what would you do in this situation? Everybody can give you advice, and it's all contradictory. What I would ask is people who've been in your situation, ask what they did and what happened. We'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends after this trip. Pause for a cause.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
ZX, ZX.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
This is the part of the show we like to call the redemption in the third act, because that's what it is. Other radio shows scare the heck out of you and get you chasing the wrong things. They get you going down rabbit holes, worrying about, they make you lose sleep over what Obama's doing to you today. And once you just acknowledge that he's a liar, he's a socialist and his feet stink and he's going to steal and murder and kill and everything else every politician has done throughout history, you can sleep better. You don't have to keep your head in the sand. You just have to know that politicians do what they're going to do. And the best thing you can do for freedom is find freedom in your own life and freedom in your own head. And a lot of that is getting bad people out of your life. And I would say that to tie this into the name of the show, Trust Without Truth is for Suckers. I would say that keeping bad people in your life is a form of lying. It's lying to yourself. It really is.
It is, and we're in the first hour, we talked more about politicians and government and so forth. In the second hour, we talked more about individuals and how these things apply to the individual. But, going back to the first hour, when you believe that, the president or a potential president is going to make things better by doing this or by doing that, what you're doing, you're lying to yourself by bringing this person into your life and making them a part of your hopes and dreams that great man or that great woman is going to save you somehow or make your life better, rather than facing the truth that person is a burden to you. And even though I don't personally know Barack Obama, if I believed that he was there for my benefit, then I've put him into my life. So I take him out of my life.
Same thing with any Republican, too.
Yeah, it could be the same thing with George Bush, or it could be the next Bush, whoever's coming down the road.
Vladimir Bush. It's a dynasty.
Yeah. But whoever it is, for me to put hope and belief and think that great man is going to do something better than the last great man, I'm allowing him to infect my life, and I'm allowing myself to believe something that's just not true. Or on an individual basis, allowing someone into my life that I expect and I hope and I believe is going to do something good, but yet their track record has always been the opposite. You're just lying to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, people can be... I had a few terms for them. One was soul mosquitoes, which are the really minor ones. They're usually like drinking buddies and, you know, people that you go hang out with because they're easy and they're around. But the more advanced form of them, the kind that are really toxic, I call serenity vampires. My wife made up that term when I was looking for a term to use in my book, User's Manual for the Human Experience. And I think that's a great term, man. Serenity vampires.
Yeah, because they, you know, they literally suck the serenity out of your life. They suck the peace and the comfort.
And they can't not do it. They are people who get off on that and would deny it to themselves, even if you asked them about it, but definitely to you. You know, the people that thrive on drama, the people that can't be content, the people that want to upset things, the people that want attention, even if it's bad. They're serenity vampires, man. And they need a host to feed off of. They are parasites. And if you can get them out of your life, they will go find somebody else. You know, it's kind of like the minor form of it is like trolls on the internet. They say don't feed the trolls because the trolls want conflict. There are people who want to get into your life and cause conflict. And a lot of people, a lot of good people end up with them because, you know, they don't know better.
That's actually one of the major reasons I'm not on Facebook, is that there are so many of those people on Facebook that just live for the opportunity to contradict anything, so long as they can get your attention and so long as you can be in that conflict with them. They live for it.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying anything against anybody. If you, you know, if you're on Facebook and you enjoy Facebook, good for you. That's fine. It's just there's the two reasons I can't be on Facebook is because those people, I will, my weakness, I'll allow myself to be hooked in by those people, and then I'll waste my time arguing with them. And yeah. I don't want to do that.
Well, Facebook has a block switch. You can block people on Facebook. It's harder to block people in real life, especially if they're people you see every day. But there's ways to mediate it and tolerate it and get rid of it. And my book, User's Manual for the Human Experience, give some tips on that. I'm going to link it in the show notes on freedomfiends.com. Thanks, Ben Stone, for being on.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah. You can go to badquaker.com to check out Ben's podcast and writings. And he'll be back again. He's back a lot. We like him. He's smart. And I've been Michael Dean, and I will continue to be Michael Dean. But I'm going off the radio now until tomorrow. We'll be back tonight with Derek Slopey filling in for me. I mean, Derek J. Freeman. I'm reading an email from Derek Slopey. Derek J., the other Derek in my life. And then I'll be on tomorrow night. So take care, y'all. Worms, 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 worms.